bit better playing as well. I stabbed your ear there.
It looks like Ali's doing it today.
Yeah. Right.
Ali, you're not letting him loose with any clippers, though, are you?
No,
let's be
not.
Very, very clear.
I'm not. Yeah, I've got you. Don't worry.
Everyone says that.
Otherwise, it's going to be like a lockdown haircut, like one I did myself.
Yeah, as soon as he touches any clippers, everyone kind of squeals a little bit.
So, Trevor, I've known you for, oh my God, it's
a long time, Ali.
Do you know, I want to say 2013.
It's 2012, 2013, around then, yes, five serve days. Yep.
Jesus Christ, and at various other Cybosses as well, like Cybos Singapore 2015, I remember quite clearly.
Is that where we had to sing?
I got you guys singing, yeah. Actually,
by the way, it feels very odd, because I have to look down whilst he's doing the back of my hair.
It's fine, I'll put your head down.
No, it's fine, it's just I'm looking at the floor. Can I just hear you?
Can I do some buzzing, or?
Yeah, go on then.
Go on,
let him have a go.
Make sure I see this little bit here. Go to like here.
Now I'm nervous.
Yeah, like that.
I'm going to lean right down.
Oh, shit.
Don't say, oh, shit.
I'm joking. How's that? That's all right?
Yeah, perfect.
I'm going to leave you to patch up that hole, okay? I'm joking.
We went really low.
You see, what Andrew did there is he had it on grade 3.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he's just going to come back with a grade 2 and fix it all afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's exactly what he did.
Yep.
Or at least that's what I'm hoping he did.
Yeah, I did that, don't worry.
You're here today here at Cybos. You're here as Thought Machine. And I really like, by the way, Thought Machine is right next to the Discover Zone.
Yep.
Everyone in Cybos is wearing a suit. Everyone in Discover is wearing jeans. And you've gone for kind of half jeans.
Yeah, we sit... Well, we sit somewhere between those two things, right? As in, we're a scale-up now, so we've matured out of the Discover Zone stages, which I guess a few years ago we were in. And yeah, a little bit bigger. Business is scaling. Business is good. I guess I am here as Thought Machine, although not alone. There's a decent old team of us now, so yeah.
I was going to say, because I know obviously from there it was 5-7, then Thought Machine, you were kind of employee number... Give us what number it is. I want to say number 3. But
No. So Thought Machine was founded 2014. So I joined 2016. So two years later, or thereabouts. So I think, I don't know the exact number. I guess Thought Machine was about 25, 30 people at that point. Pretty much all of which was engineers. So, I mean, you know the story, but I mean, just for those listening in, So Paul Taylor, CEO and founder, built a business called Phonetic Art, sold that to Google back in 2010, worked for Google for a few years. I guess, you know, identified engineering practices within Google, and from there left, started Thought Machine. Brought all of those kind of engineering practices into financial services technology or fintech. And as I said, I joined after the business was a couple of years old. But at the point where it really needed, I guess, to, you know, understand its market and its market opportunity, it was a great technology. And I guess what I brought, I mean, my personal background, I mean, we met when I was at Fiserv. So, you know, Fiserv, old school, but large financial services technology vendor. But actually, I'd spent nearly the previous decade to that in Barclays on the business side. So I understood, you know, banking, I understood the inner workings of a bank. And Paul and the team had built a great technology, but didn't necessarily actually have that much of a relationship or an understanding, I guess, early on as to, you know, what it would take to bring that product into its end client. So I guess, I personally brought some of that to the business.
As a consumer, for me, what do you actually do?
What do we do?
Yeah.
What a great question.
Simplify it
for me,
I like my bank
to have a cloud-based core banking system.
I guess the narrative version of that is we're a next-generation cloud-native core banking provider. The plain English version of that is a core banking system is the system of record. So it is where your transactions or your balances are held.
Yep.
And it is the product engine. So it is how your product actually works. So if you've got a mortgage or a credit card or a loan, or a deposit product, all of those products actually operate within the core system. And then where you as a consumer come in, so things like, you know, through your mobile banking app or online banking or perhaps even in a branch, Those systems kind of sit above the core, okay. But it's the core system that actually is managing your product and your money.
Okay.
Basically.
So like the operating system of a computer, basically.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally you can do that comparison. So you know, like an operating system, and if we use that comparison, the way Thought Machine is engineered, the bank product, so a current account or a mortgage or a loan. We write them as smart contracts, so we write them as Python code, independent and orchestrated away from the kernel of the system. We've got scissors out now. Less noise for the microphone.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, that flexibility means that banks can build any product they want. And without getting kind of too much into the detail, previous generations of these systems have been very, very inflexible, so monolithic architecture. So built in the 70s or the 80s.
Okay.
And if you imagine if you were, you know, driving around in a car that was built in the 70s or 80s, it would be expensive to maintain and it wouldn't perform very well.
Yeah.
So, you know, to take that analogy out, we've built a completely modern next generation version.
Love that.
Now, the core banking, it's almost its own mini industry within fintech. I want to get your opinion on some of the products out there, some of the core banking ones out there.
That sounds like you want me to talk about all of the competitors.
I do. Right. SAP's core system.
Well, so look, I think the way to think about it is there are different generations of these technologies, and you know, if a bank is on a version of a mainframe monolithically coded core system, it is reliable, no doubt, but it is incredibly inflexible. It is expensive to maintain. And as consumers start to demand, you know, more innovation, it's difficult for banks on previous generations of technology to bring those types of innovation or those types of experiences to bear. So that, you know, that is problematic. Now, they were fit for purpose. Whether or not they are fit for future is a different debate, and one that we would resolutely say they are not. Our purpose is to bring a new generation of technology to core.
I always remember your CEO at Paris FinTech Forum was on stage with the CEO of Temenos.
Indeed.
Talking about being cloud native. What's your thoughts on Temenos? I'm not going to repeat what Paul said as he came off stage,
Again. Well, that sounds like you had an opinion that you got provided directly. So look, again, nobody's here to diss versions of competition. Temenos is a generation of technology where, you know, they are and continue to develop their technology. They're a very successful organization. But is it modern in the way that we are modern? No, we are built in the cloud, for the cloud, genuinely cloud native. That means that we use the best of the cloud technologies, so Kubernetes, Kafka, etc., you know, Cockroach DB, and so on. It's a fully microservice architecture. It's RESTful APIs around the top end. It is completely of this generation. Is Temenos or any of the previous vendors of this generation? No, they're not. And there are disadvantages to that. There is, earlier I referenced the smart contracts. In the main, any previous generation of core system is coded within, which means that you have to go back to the vendor to have a change to any product. And by product, I mean a bank's product. So a current account, a mortgage, a credit card, a loan, etc. You're having to go back to the vendor. Now, most of them will talk in the language of composability. So we can compose you a product. But composability, by the very nature of it, is limited to the composition that's available, the composing that you can do. Whereas with Thought Machine and Vault Core, you're not limited by that. You can build literally any product. And the most important manifestation of that is you can also build any product that already exists in your existing cores. And that means that you can migrate from what you currently have to Vault Core into a future, and you can carry across all of your existing products, which is why tier one banks around the world are attracted to Thought Machine and Vault Core, because they know they can build a digital greenfield bank over here. And that's great for innovation and new products and new offerings. But in time, they also know that they can bring across all of their existing customers, and those products will be exact to the products that the customer currently has. And that allows us to kind of sit in the market and go, we're great for new innovation, we're great for new digital banks, but we're also great for migration programs. And that's different to what's gone before.
Very well said. Thanks as well for talking about that. I got my clickbait quote out of you there. It's what I need.
Did you? Where was it? Somewhere in the pool thing, yeah. Was it?
You'll find out soon.
We'll get that there. The thing about I find interesting about the likes of the sort of the next generation of core banking platforms coming through is a lot of people, yourself, Paul, for example, you're at the stage in your career, you don't have to work for a paycheck.
Sure.
You can choose what you do.
Sure.
So why in the core banking platform space when you could, you know, it's not just about the money.
Why?
What is it about that appeals?
Because it's hard. I mean, it is genuinely hard, really hard. And what I mean by that is, the systems within banks are complex, there is no doubt. But the systems that are the biggest and most problematic are what we describe as the foundational systems. And foundational systems, from our perspective, are core and payments. And actually, Thought Machine, a company, is doing both. So we have Vault Core, and we've just this year introduced Vault Payments. These are the main systems within a bank. Everything else is over on top. And that's not to decry any of the other systems. They're important. But things like KYC or fraud and risk analytics or onboarding processes or channel are all systems that sit on top of a core system or on top of a payment system. Which means that they are tremendously important, but it also means they are complex systems, important and complex systems, and ones that which a bank is going to rely upon for many decades. They are not systems that you change, in a short period of time. They are complex and scale systems. So why do it? Because I was a banker for nearly a decade, and for a lot of that time, my experience within the bank was we couldn't launch the products we wanted to launch. The systems were inflexible. It was challenging to create experiences that our customers wanted. Banks are not short of good ideas, great product propositions, but getting those product propositions to market has been challenging. And Thought Machine, Vault Core, and Vault Payments solves for those things. You can genuinely create great product experiences, or great products and thus customer experiences. And it's more than just the outcome for the customer. The outcome for the bank is lower cost, as I said, better experiences, but lower cost, less rigidity or more flexibility in their systems. That means that they can bring other systems in that they wouldn't otherwise have been able to do so. And the result of that, and to give it a summary, is a sustainable technology stack and a sustainable business model for banking. And that might sound like an exaggeration, but on its current technology, banking is not that sustainable. And it becomes sustainable when you move the core and other systems into cloud-native technology and into cloud infrastructure deployment. So, you reference this as, hey, you can choose what to do with your career at this point, and perhaps we can, but we choose to give banking a future. And otherwise, it has a risk of not having one or not having a sustainable one.
This is definitely something that, because I was at FinTech Finance Week London as well.
Yep.
And this is obviously for someone new to the sector for me, or like new learning things about this. What I found about FinTechs especially is that there was more for the consumer than, say, a bank was.
Sure.
And like that pushes on to something I learned there, which is about Web3 and stuff. So how do you guys move forward with that and be, more for the consumer? Because obviously, is that by pushing the banks to be more for consumer as well?
I think there's two parts to the answer. The first is, fintechs, by the very nature of what they are the types of places that attract people who want to work on challenging problems. And challenging problems are things like what financial products should exist in the future, how do you solve for proportions of the world population that are unbanked. And you bring very, very talented people into fintechs because they're attractive places to work, because they're solving big and complex problems.
Yeah.
That's why people want to work for them.
Yeah.
The result of that is they build products or services that solve for those problems, and the result of that is that banks then adopt those technologies and can provide those end services. So, you know, do we set out as a company to go, hey, we're going to provide a banking technology that can solve for the unbanked populace? No. We set out to say, we're going to build a great banking technology that banks can adopt. It will lower their cost, it'll make their products more accessible, it'll mean they can put those products into new markets or they can put them into markets that they haven't got to before,
yeah.
And that solves for some of those problems.
Yeah, definitely.
But it solves for some of those problems because the people that came into the industry and built the technology, you know, had a mindset of going, hey, I want to build great technologies. And what bankers do with it is to some extent, you know, up to bankers, but what they do with it is they deploy it for the best effect of the bank. And that's giving better offerings to their current customers and giving offerings to customers that they couldn't otherwise address,
yeah.
Be that a geographical location or be that because they couldn't address an offering because it wasn't economically viable to do so before, and it becomes economically viable, which talks back to my point around effectively we create a future state of banking that becomes sustainable, but it becomes more than just sustainable. It becomes sustainable in a way that it becomes more accessible to more people, potentially at least.
Makes sense.
One of your customers, I'm a big fan of.
Oh yeah? Who's that?
Curve.
Yeah. Oh, Curve?
Yeah.
Trying to work.
Curve, yeah, Curve.
Oh, the socks. I'm looking at the trainers thinking there's nothing written on those trainers, Ali. Curve.
Curve. Big fan of Curve.
Yeah.
Have I mentioned this to you before, Andrew?
Yeah, a lot of times, yeah, actually.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a fanboy for Curve. At least once a week I tweet to them on Amex just to stir the pot a bit.
Right, go on then, yep.
Curve Flex.
Yep.
How do you, have you, what have you kind of done with Curve to kind of build that out? And what was kind of their brief that that you were then trying to fulfill?
Yeah.
It wasn't like, we want to do Monzo Flex, but we're going to call it Curve Flex. There was a lot of work to get to that point.
No. Well, so you're going to get a part answer here, Ali.
That's all right.
Partly because we kind of don't get too deeply in terms of commenting on very specific products within specific clients. But what I will do is a more generalized piece, right? Which is Vault Core is enormously flexible, as I've said. That means that we're attracted at one end, you get a tier one bank who wants to build a digital greenfield, and at the other end, you get a client like Curve, who's already a very, very successful fintech. So why would a successful fintech come to a company like Thought Machine and go, hey, I need a core banking system? Because the argument would naturally go, surely they're already a fintech, surely they already have technology that solves for this themselves from within. And the answer comes to that in that some of the great fintechs, they have built what might be described as monoline offerings. So they bring themselves to market, they provide a great experience, but it's quite narrow. In terms of what that experience is. And then they look at their own business model and go, hey, how do we bring wider product? How do we put more product into our platform or into our offering? And the answer to that is Thought Machine and Vault Core. Because as we described earlier, the flexibility of smart contracts means you can build any offering. So whether or not it's, you know, Curve Flex or whether or not it's, you know, Mox in Hong Kong for Standard Chartered, doing, you know, symbiotic credit and debit products all available on a single piece of plastic at the end, or whether or not it's just a scale out for something like, you know, Standard Chartered doing Trust Bank, which is the largest growing new digital bank in Asia Pacific, they all fundamentally come down to a single thing, which is the flexibility of manufacturing and deploying product. And then at the other end, the tier ones going, if I wanted to have a future state where I could migrate my core, I need to be able to know that I can replicate my existing products. All of those rely upon a manufacturing flexibility that we bring. So, I mean, you asked a very specific question about Curve, and I've answered in a broader context, but realistically what it came down to was, could they manufacture a new product that they want to bring to market quickly on existing technology, or could they manufacture it on ours? And the answer to that is, quicker on ours.
Yeah, probably quicker, probably cheaper overall than, yep, than basically trying to build their own core platform.
Yeah, and that does talk to the fact that even the best of the new fintech banks are limited in terms of the types of products and services they can bring, because they're building them within their own technology, and that is a limited life cycle, potentially.
There's a GIF going around at the moment, we'll load it up, of banks on their way for the digital transformation. It's incredible. It's a monster truck, load of people in it. It's going across a big lake, gets about halfway, and it just goes straight under. And it's why you mentioned, I get that it's hard.
Yes.
But why is it that so many banks are scared and not taking that step to kind of, why are they so focused on running the bank as opposed to change the bank? Or what can be done to change that mindset?
I don't know that I think banks are scared. I think banks are very complex things. So you take, it's got to continue operating, so you can't stop it. It's got to be regulatory compliant, so you've got to make sure that whatever you're doing, whenever you're doing it, satisfies the regulatory requirements. You've got to do things in such a way that you don't disturb consumers as you do them. And you've got to make decisions that are very long range. So you've got to be very satisfied that as you make those decisions, you've made the right ones. So for a whole variety of reasons, that means it's complex. But you described it as scared. I don't think banks are scared.
Well,
as
I'm
such.
They're addressing
complexity. Yeah. And I think the other way of looking at it is there was also a lack of maturity in fintech. A lot of these technologies had not reached a maturity stage where they could be deployed at scale. So the industry's also had to wait for some of that maturity to happen. And if I put that in the context of Thought Machine, the company's 8 years old, but the maturity is probably in the last, let's describe it as the last 4 years, where this technology has got to a point where it can now be deployed at scale, and banks are testing it and deploying it at scale. That's a relatively short period of time that this technology has existed. So, you know, now you go, so technology now exists that you can transform your bank. Now you've got to get yourself in an operating cadence to be able to. And that means that you need to bring in technical competency. So you need people who can operate this technology at this level. You need SIs to partner with you who can understand the ecosystem of your bank as it exists at the moment. And again, a Thought Machine version of that is we have over 60 partners in our ecosystem now, a good third of which, I guess, are SIs who have built out technical competency. We have thousands of people, literally thousands of people now, engineers within those SIs. So, you know, whether or not it's Accenture or KPMG or Deloitte or EY or GFT or others that I've, you know, not mentioned, that won't forgive me for not mentioning them at this point, they now all have loads of people formally trained. Some of those are in banks deploying the technology now. That ecosystem is building out. So, you know, to some extent, banks have to rely upon that ecosystem existing, so technology coming to market, the industry adopting that technology and building up a competency about that technology, and then getting on with actually getting it deployed. And frankly, that takes some time to happen. And we're, you know, a few years into that happening, but it absolutely is happening, and it's now happening at pace and at scale.
I'm a big movie fan. I love my movies. I always think of, I can think of at least two people, I think Pete Jackson and George Lucas, who both said, when I saw Jurassic Park, that's when I realized we were there in order to make Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or whatever it may be. Yeah. And it was, again, that kind of watershed moment. And then James Cameron, when I saw Gollum, that I thought, yeah, we can make, you know, finally do my Avatar movie. Do you think that there was, I mean, Monzo's one of the obvious ones that everyone was talking about that made everyone think, it was their Jurassic Park moment where banks go, oh my God, this is here. That means we can finally do what we've wanted to do with our core platform or our generally our just complete consumer interface.
Yeah.
Do you think it was the neobanks had a good kind of role to play in showcasing what can be done?
I think neobanks, this is weird having to do it with my eyes shut. I think neobanks, they certainly showed that new experiences would be adopted by customers. Now, you might argue, well, that was going to be an obvious outcome because, you know, post 2007, you know, the smartphones coming out into market or there or thereabouts, people started adopting them, right? So, you might argue it was obvious that people were going to accept new or want new experiences. But the neobanks kind of proved that out. A richer visual experience, better transactional understanding, the ability to adopt products or take out products really quickly. These were things that people wanted. So neobanks proved that out. If your point is, so therefore did that nudge the bigger banks into a behavior? Yeah, I mean, perhaps. I think there's a reasonable argument that says they would have known that customers were going to want those things anyway, because you only looked at other industries. What was happening in retailing and the adoption of, you know, online retailing, or what was happening in media and the adoption of streaming services, or what was happening in gaming and the adoption of, you know, real-time gaming activities, would suggest that consumer behavior was going to change anyway, or at least consumer demand was going to change anyway.
Well, I mean, fintechs have changed my life, because for me, I'm with a building society,
yeah.
And let's put it this way, their online banking is so annoying.
I know, yeah. I love it. You need to have the card and
the
machine.
You have to have a card reader, a machine. So now, it's changed. So that was so long, always made my life hell. I couldn't send someone money if I was gone out for dinner, I couldn't send it to them. So now I've got a Monzo, I can keep my building society, which I've had for a long time. I can keep that as my current account.
Yeah.
I've got a Monzo, and I can just transfer money into that and then send it wherever I want, you know? So it has changed me and helped me in that way. But the banks need to definitely adopt that, which most banks have, but this one building society just will not change.
And I don't know. Remaining unnamed for the purpose of this. Yeah.
We'll say it who it is after. I'm pretty sure you already know.
Do you reckon it's a building society that uses an SAP core system by chance?
It may well be, who knows? look, I think, you know, as we were saying, there's no doubt that people want better banking, better experiences. Is that now possible? Yes. Do neos show the way? Yes. Are banks following? You know, I referenced earlier two banks that Standard Chartered have done with us, Mox and Trust Bank in Hong Kong and Singapore. I mean, they're really good examples. You know, they're a traditional bank, you know, partnering up with other vendors because they're JVs, building brand new digital banks, new experiences, and taking the respective markets by storm in terms of the volume of customers that are adopting them. Faster adoption rates than we saw for neobanks in the European markets in the early stages. That's good news. That means that argument is, you know, being firmly adopted by banks around the world. I think we're at the beginning of this stage of transformation. You know, I referenced the age of some of these technologies. As I said, we're a relatively young firm.
Still got time to go.
There's a lot of banks in the world, by our assessment, you know, something between 16 and 20,000, depending on how you determine what a bank is.
Yeah.
Yet we still seem to tend to talk about, you know, the relatively small numbers and few known names that we talk about.
Do you see that number growing with the amount of fintechs and stuff?
Will there be an increase in number of banks? There might be an increase in access to banking services. So we might see banking more accessible by other means. So a number of our clients are already using Vault as what's called BaaS, banking as a service.
Okay, yeah.
Where they're taking our technology and you know, their license and their, you know, their risk appetites and their balance sheet positions, and providing those as banking as a service to others. You know, SEB, through SEBX, is already providing a banking as a service offering in the Netherlands. So yeah, I think you'll see embedded finance or banking as a service offered from existing financial institutions into other environments. Whether or not you're going to see a growth in the volume of banks, I don't know, because there's also an argument that says the industry is going to see some consolidation.
Yeah, so it could go either.
But I think what is important is that banking services are going to be more and more accessible at the point of need, as opposed to having to go to your bank for access to banking services.
Amazing. Great news. You're all done.
Right. Am I? Wow.
There we are.
Yeah.
Look at that.
That was quick and easy.
The sound for this. Mondo loves the sound.
Yeah. Let's really shout over the hairdryer.